Southern tree bears strange fruit, blood on the leaves and blood at the roots, black body swinging in the southern breeze, strange fruit hanging from the poplar tree. Host of scenes of the gallant South, them bulging eyes and a twisted mouth, scent of magnolia sweet and fresh, and the sin smell of burning flesh. Here is a fruit for the crows to pluck, for the rain to gather, for the wind. Oh, here is a strange and bitter
welcome to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman, and you can hear us at accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com, or you can friend this program at Facebook. Today's program includes David K. Johnson interview. Terrence McNally, journalist and radio host, interviews David K. Johnson, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author. David K. Johnson worked as an investigative reporter for several newspapers. He's the author of two bestsellers, Perfectly Legal and Free Lunch. And then after that, Scott Horton interviews the other Scott Horton. The other Scott Horton discusses the protest letter signed by top U.S. legal scholars, including Obama's law professor at Harvard, about Bradley Manning's illegal and immoral conditions of detainment, how Manning is subjected to unnecessary security suicide prevention measures to punish and vilify him, and the U.S. refusal to allow a private meeting between Manning and the U.N. representative on torture.
And also, you know, what kind of, you're going to have a healthy society if incomes at the bottom aren't better. And let me take you to some really interesting data about that. I've been tracking how much American workers make. There is a database that I discovered by accident one day that the Bush administration had actually put those anti-robot things on it so you couldn't find it doing a Google search. And I just by accident stumbled across it, and it is a to-the-penny measure of every buddy in America who has a job and how much they were paid. And it's the Medicare tax, and it goes all the way up to $50 million. So I can tell you how many workers in America make $50 million a year or more. It was 72 last year, or in 2009, and 74 the year before, and they made over $80 million on average. But the two things that matter are the median wage and the average wage. The median is half make more, half make less. And from the year 2000 to the year 2009, it's been almost totally unchanged. It's been a little over $500 a week every single year. It has not grown. That's very troubling. It grew 0.6% from 2000 to 2009. Even the peak year of 2007, when the economy was doing well, it had only gone up 2%. The average wage, however, has been going up, but not a lot. It's gone up from 2000 to 2009, 2.2%. Now, that's after 10 years. But what that tells you, and the average wage, by the way, is right around $39,000, $750 a week. But it's all because of the growth at the top.
Right.
75% of workers make less than $50,000 a year. 80% make less than $80,000. 75% make less than $80,000 a year. 99% make less than $200,000 a year.
Wow. Okay.
But the growth is all in this group of $100,000 and up jobs. Now, on the one hand, that's a good thing. People who have educations, people who have developed skills are being paid well. But at the bottom, remember what Richard Nixon said? At least I'm old enough to remember this. He once said that cleaning bedpans has the same dignity as the presidency. Well, how come we don't pay people that way? In Europe, the janitors and practical nurses make enough money that they can live a decent life. But in America, they can't do that.
And by the way, when you say that about workers in Europe, are you saying they make enough to have a decent life because they make enough, or because the safety net of necessities is taken care of, or is it both?
Well, it's both. They, first of all, have minimum incomes policies, and then many, many things that you and I pay for with our after-tax dollars are paid for with the tax system there. So while Europeans have lower incomes and higher taxes, they generally tend to live better lives, and they have more job security, and when things happen, you know, only in America, among modern countries, do people go bankrupt because of medical bills, or do they die for lack of medical care? And what we're doing is immoral.
Absolutely.
You know, I am shocked by all the people who spout their religious beliefs as politicians and then say universal health care is wrong. They are no different than the people who 100 years ago said that if you want a child labor law, you are an agent of the devil, for it is God's plan that these children should be working in the mills. And it's the exact same thing. They spout their religious views, and then they act in the exact opposite of those views. And my concern is the hypocrisy of that, but it's also the practicality of it. Why do we put health care on the backs of businesses, including small businesses, instead of having the government handle it? If we ran public schools the same way we run the health care system, every kindergarten teacher would have to fill out a daily report, a cost accounting report.
Right.
I issued so many green crayons today, so many red crayons, so many paste pots, so many safety scissors to my kindergartners. That's what we do to doctors.
Yeah.
And it is wasteful. It makes a few people very, very rich, and it kills, at a minimum, more than 1,000 people a day for lack of health care, including 3 people when I lived in L.A. who all died because they didn't have medical insurance. They had medical insurance, they'd probably be alive today.
These were friends of yours?
These are friends of mine
in
Los Angeles. When I lived there from 79 to 88. And I've known many people since then, I mean, elsewhere.
Yeah.
You can go to the emergency room. Emergency rooms don't treat cancer and diabetes. They treat emergencies. Healthcare isn't going to an emergency room.
And also the fact that we have this antiquated association of employers and insurance, which goes back to World War II, and it was a way to get around price controls. It's an inducement to send jobs overseas.
Yes, absolutely. And by the way, when you go overseas, the costs are still there. Society bears them, but it does it on society's books, not on the company's books. And many of the people in America who have health care, they have terrible, crummy health care. They don't. I mean, imagine the average worker in America had been shot the way that Representative Giffords was in
Arizona. Yeah.
You think they would have been put in a private jet and flown to rehab in Houston, at the top place in the country for that?
Well, let's figure. Where do people get shot in America? I would imagine that a good percentage of them get shot in exactly those neighborhoods and parts of cities where that treatment does not happen.
That's exactly right, and many of them are just, you know, perfectly innocent people. I mean, I remember writing a lot of stories about drive-by gang shootings when I was at the L.A. Times. And so, you know, fundamentally what we've done with our tax system is we have bought into this idea that we have to cut taxes on the rich or we will all be poor. Well, you know, we've been doing this now for 30 years. The evidence is overwhelming that it hasn't worked. How much evidence do we need? I mean, do we need to literally do what George Washington's doctors did, bleed him to death, before we recognize we've made a mistake? Do we have to kill the country? Or at some point do we say, you know, nobody else in the world is doing it quite the way we're doing it, and they're not having the same results that we are. They're having better results. They have unions in most of Europe and Japan for all the workers, and in some cases not just managers but low-level executives. Why do we think the lone individual should have to negotiate their job with, A, a giant corporation, or, B, a giant government, instead of doing it collectively as a group? That's not a market where you, the individual, know nothing and the big employer knows everything.
That's interesting. In both those cases, you're pointing out that we keep putting the work of negotiating your contract or dealing with healthcare and so on the individual or the small company, which obviously is an inefficient, ineffective way to do it. So in terms of solutions, it seems to me there's two steps there. One, what would work? And two, in the face of this overwhelming evidence that what is currently working is not working, and yet we get more of the same, what's it going to take to move in that direction? In terms of the solutions in the face of Citizens United, in the face, as I say, you've been doing this for years, pouring out the evidence. It doesn't seem to make any difference. Things only get worse. What is it really going to take?
You know, there's a theory about democracies that they don't self-correct until they've gotten to a really serious deep crisis. And I don't think we're nearly as bad off as we could be before we begin to correct. But the developments in Wisconsin and Michigan and Ohio suggest that there is an awakening going on among many workers that their interests are here. Governor Walker tried, you know, to separate the police and the fire.
From the teachers and others,
The teachers and the nurses. And I would suggest anybody who wants to understand the reason he did that might want to read Plato and Aristotle on how tyrants can be identified early on by how they surround themselves with bodyguards. The outcome of this will be very important. If, in fact, Governor Walker, Governor Kasich, and in Michigan Governor Snyder succeed in their drive, then I think we're going to see a complete corporatization of the culture, worsening incomes for all but the top 10 or 15% of the population. And there's a large movement in this country to end public education and to end public parks. Milton Friedman, who's revered as a god by the Republican establishment, wanted to eliminate all public parks and all public municipal golf courses, for example, because these are the coercive misuse of the power of the state, and all parks should be private. And the amount of subsidies will go up. On the other hand, if there are recalls and this movement is stopped, I think then you will begin to see some swinging back away from these very extreme positions, which are not based, by the way, on market capitalism. They are based on something I call corporate socialism, in which the government sets the rules in such a way that profits are privatized and losses are socialized. And the massive hidden subsidies that I exposed in Free Lunch to corporations might be wheeled back some, and we'll begin to say, how do we create a stable society that rewards people who play by the rules, that reinforces virtuous behavior, that self-punishes vicious behavior? And my books talk about various techniques that we can do this with. In my next book, which is about pricing and how companies artificially jack up prices to people and charge for things that don't even exist, like taxes that don't even exist, and force you to pay them through subtle means, We can begin to change that. But there's another element to this, and that is we have created a society where we worship people for being rich, or maybe in the case of people like Donald Trump, the appearance of being rich. And we do it, you know, what did Martin Luther King say? I want my four little children to grow up in a world where they'll be judged not by the color of their skin, but the content of their character. And we have instead created a society where you are judged by the presumed content of your wallet. That is no basis to sustain a society. None at all.
Yes, and certainly not a civilization, if you know what I mean. You can have a society like that for a while, but it's not a social system.
And none of that, Terrence, is to argue we don't want to have wealthy people. I mean, I'm somebody who started out, I had to go to work when I was 10 years old and full-time when I was 13. Because my dad was 100% disabled veteran of World War II. And I'm a reasonably wealthy man today because I've been prudent and I've been very lucky, and a lot of people helped me along the way. My objection here is not to money, but if you're going to make money, make it in the marketplace. Don't have the government pass a law that makes you pay a tax to give it to Warren Buffett so he can be richer, or that lets somebody else borrow money and not have to pay it back on the scale of millions and hundreds of millions of dollars, or give them huge interest-free loans from the government that last decades. Don't do that. Earn it in the marketplace. Earn it because you decided it was important to you to make money. But let's recognize you can't have a functioning society without police officers who are competent and educated and know what to do, without nurses, librarians, school teachers, all of these other functions that are necessary for a society to work. And the foundation of private wealth is commonwealth. We are destroying our commonwealth, eating it up, letting roads and bridges and dams fall apart so that the already rich can have more and more and more. And that's just not a smart strategy.
Now, it strikes me that you've also done some talking and writing over the last few years about the role that the media plays in this, because that this would be going on in to the extent it is, seems only possible with a terribly failed media.
Well, now I think it could go on even if the media were doing their job, but having said that, the media have done a crummy job, and they've done it for a couple of key reasons. First of all, most news is he said journalism. That is, when you read that the president or John Boehner or Mayor Villaraigosa said something yesterday, he said it, okay? But whether the journalist understood what it meant is a whole different question.
And whether he checked whether it were true or accurate is another.
That's correct. That's correct. And the first rule of journalism is check it out. The second rule is cross-check and cross-check, not until you know all sides of the story, but you also know where that story belongs in the universe, what its importance and relative connection is to other things. And those two rules have been breaking down as we have had these huge cuts in the media. And you go back and look at the L.A. Times in the 60s and 70s and the 80s. It had lots of flaws. You and I could sit here and spend hours picking lint off it. It's also an incredibly fine newspaper that did a lot of good things, including my coverage of the LAPD that changed everybody's understanding of how it operated.
That's right. There was a David K. Johnston before he became a tax wonk.
That's right. But increasingly, what we're seeing is coverage by talking point and unskeptical acceptance of points. And Dean Baker runs a website called Beat the Press. It's a blog. Every day he finds stories in the Washington Post especially, the LA Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the New York Times that have economic nonsense in them. And I've in a number of cases written to the ombudsman of the various papers saying, you know, you have a story today that is just absolute nonsense as a matter of textbook economics. I never see that anybody fixes anything. Occasionally I get a note saying, thank you, we talked about it. But what the far right, the Koch brother-funded organizations and stuff, have come to understand is that if you can polish an idea, you can sell it just the way 50 years ago young men put Brill Cream in their hair because grease was supposed to make you sexy. Or you smoke cigarettes and they ran ads saying, you know, 4 out of 5 doctors.
Exactly.
Lucky strike. They're just absolute lies that are ideological and economic marketing to help the already rich make themselves richer. And the news media, because so much of it is he said journalism, because most journalists are innumerate, they do not understand numbers, most people don't understand numbers, and because very few of them have ever taken even one course in public administration, for example, or public policy, or statistics, they get bamboozled every day of the week. And so the odds here have been changed tremendously. You have these huge factories turning out information, and then to expect, you know, the relative handful of reporters, you know, that's just absurd. There are 14. The last time I checked, there were 35,000 registered lobbyists in Washington, and they changed the rules some, and a bunch of people aren't registered anymore. But there are literally several tens of thousands of people in D.C. whose job is to influence Congress and the regulatory agencies. There aren't that many reporters.
No, right,
there's
exactly.
There's a tiny number of them, yep, in comparison. And so they're totally outgunned. On the other hand, they're not, you know, they're also not skeptical enough. And that's a real problem, that journalists need to remember your job is to be skeptical of everything. There's a phrase I every lecture I give on journalism all around the world, I say, first rule of journalism, check it out. Your mother says she loves you, check it out.
Okay, we got to close it there, David. The books are free lunch and perfectly legal, and the column is at tax. The columns are at tax.com. You can listen to this week's conversation and many others anytime during the week by linking to the podcast. You can sign up to have it delivered to you weekly, either at my website or at iTunes. My website's terrencemcnally.net or aworldthatjustmightwork.com, whichever one's easier for you to remember. You can also sign up at my website or by emailing me at TEMcNally@mac.com to have an announcement every week emailed to you that tells you who's going to be on what we're going to talk about in two or three articles about the issues. Finally, thank you to David K. Johnston, and keep up the good work.
Rolling on the road. now for something completely different.